The moment the entire country has been waiting for after a very close race.
CNN projects Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th president of the United States, winning the White House and denying President Trump a second term.
Americans flooded the streets Saturday across the nation. They celebrated former Vice President Joe Biden's victory as the 46th president of the United States. A record 75 million Americans voted for Biden. 70 million voted for President Donald Trump, a nation divided. The 2020 presidential election came in the midst of the novel coronavirus pandemic. Voters cast more mail-in ballots than ever before. Over the past few months, President Trump has repeatedly sowed doubt over the election process. He's focused much of his energy on Pennsylvania, who extended the deadline for ballots to be accepted 3 days after Election Day. Pennsylvania officials were also not allowed to start counting mail-in ballots until Election Day, leading Trump to attack the delayed tabulation process.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. This is a case where they're trying to steal an election. They're trying to rig an election.
As of last week, the president filed suit in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona, all states in which Biden beat Trump by narrow margins. Daniel Rodriguez is the Harold Washington Professor of Law at Northwestern University Pritzker School of Law. I spoke with the former Pritzker dean to better understand the legal basis of Trump's lawsuits.
What does the Constitution say about, or doesn't say, about election laws in the United States?
The Constitution gives the state, and that means, of course, the state governments, the exclusive power to set out what they call the time, place, and manner of elections. And so what that means is come election time, whether we're talking about any elections, including the presidential election, the basic rules of the game, how to run elections, balloting, all of those issues are dealt with at the state level. Now, having said that, states are not free to do anything they want. There are constitutional cases, many cases over the years, that define the scope of what we call the right to vote, that establish sort of the rule, the requirements that states must follow to make sure that we, the people, all of us, have the ability to cast our vote in elections, including presidential elections.
The Pennsylvania Secretary of State extended the deadline for receiving ballots from Election Day to 3 days later. President Trump filed suit claiming this violated Pennsylvania election law. The state court upheld the decision, so Trump appealed to the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court decided a very technical issue, but of course a momentous issue, and that is not to permit an emergency appeal. In other words, not to consider the case when the administration wanted them to consider it, which was right away. However, and three justices said this explicitly, however, we reserve the prerogative and may even consider challenges after the election without committing themselves one way or the other to do that.
Supreme Court Justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas issued a statement directing Pennsylvania to segregate ballots that arrived after Election Day. In the event the court takes the case in the future, these ballots can simply be exempt from the total count and thrown away.
It certainly becomes even more momentous that the Supreme Court, any justices of the Supreme Court, hold out the prospect that they will hear a challenge to Pennsylvania sometime after the election. And now, of course, we know, where are we, November 5th, that Pennsylvania might in fact matter to the outcome.
It did matter, as Pennsylvania won Biden the presidency just 2 days later. Trump led Biden in the state until the end of the week. As more ballots were being counted, Biden surpassed Trump and began to pull away.
I want to talk about two things that Alito said in this opinion. One, he brings up this question of state law. So the question is, does the state legislature have the last word on setting the state election procedures, or does the state court? And he says it's the state legislature. What does the Constitution say?
So let's unpack it a little bit. You're absolutely right. This is sort of the heart of the disagreement, is the relationship between what the state legislature says must happen and what the state courts say must happen. The United States Constitution, with respect to its specific language, speaks of state legislatures. It doesn't say anything about state courts. It doesn't say anything about the state executive branch. It says state legislatures. And the way that some justices are reading that is to say they meant exactly what they said, And when they said state legislatures, it meant that state legislatures would make that judgment without any risk of contravention by any other institutions within state government, like state courts. That view that state legislatures means only the state legislature, no role of the court, doesn't deal with the fact that you have 50 states that all have their own constitutions and constitutional arrangements. It's a sort of a strange result to basically say, oh, the U.S. Constitution, United States Constitution, defines exactly how the business of state government within the structure of state government. They must have, is the argument, they must have contemplated that by state legislatures, they mean basically the state political process, which certainly will include state legislatures, but those state legislative judgments may be subject to decisions of the state courts, as here, as it was. And that was a judgment that was not just some random state court in Pennsylvania, but the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The nub of the disagreement with respect to this is whether state legislatures means exactly what it says, or should it be decided in a somewhat more contextual way? I think that this is almost schizophrenia about it, because on the one hand, yes, it's state by state, but on the other hand, this is a national election. You know, the enfranchisement is enfranchisement at the national level. The state doesn't get to decide, you know, that 16-year-olds can vote in this election in this state and 24-year-olds can't. Felons can decide to vote in this state, they can in that. So you have to have some national criteria, national standards. And, you know, it's so problematic that there's just these differences.
Michael Kang teaches election law at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law. He specializes in voting rights, election administration, and campaign finance.
The president had a press conference yesterday from the White House on November 5th. And he said, if you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us. What are the illegal votes that he's referring to?
Yeah, it's a good question. So he's been talking about illegal votes and suspicions with mail voting. Those are just really vague and nonspecific objections that he has, and certainly don't come close to meeting any sort of legal definition of voter fraud or illegality. And so, I mean, I think a lot of this is political theater more than any sort of legal claim. If we look for voter fraud associated with mail voting, there really isn't much evidence of it. And more importantly, there's nothing, no evidence of systematic voter fraud, which is really what he's complaining about, that there's kind of widespread voter fraud at the level at which, you know, it would change the outcomes of election.
One Supreme Court decision that did change the outcome of the election was Bush v. Gore in 2000. The court reversed a Florida Supreme Court request for a selective manual recount of the state's presidential election ballots. The 5-4 decision effectively awarded Florida's 25 electoral college votes, and thus the election itself, to Republican candidate George W. Bush. There was something rather different, though, about the court's per curiam opinion.
It says, quote, "Our consideration is limited to the present circumstances, where the problem of equal protection in election processes generally presents many complexities." Yeah. Our consideration is limited to the present circumstances, which to me just goes against the whole Supreme Court, you know, setting precedents. Like, okay, this is for this case. Yet here we have President Trump citing this case in his lawsuits today against the states.
Right. So, yeah, I think you're right. And that aspect of Bush versus Gore is much criticized as a one-way ticket and applied only for that case. And that's a bad sign usually in law, because it suggests that you don't have confidence in the basic principle. And you're deciding this on some weird case-specific basis rather than as a larger principle of law that you think makes sense in lots of cases if it's a good idea. So I think that all of that is exactly right, but it's consistent with this understanding of Bush versus Gore as this weird one-off case where the Supreme Court was acting as much politically as it was legally. Bush versus Gore has come back a little bit here, and I think it looms large in Donald Trump's imagination. I think he had an idea that the Supreme Court, if he could put three justices on there that owe him their jobs, that they're supposed to like save him from an election loss. And I don't know that it's that much more complicated for him than that. But it's not the case that the Supreme Court just is some sort of cleanup crew for the president that appoints the justices.
Bush versus Gore, if nothing else, is a Supreme Court decision. It relates to elections. It relates to presidential elections. In that case, the Republican won. So it has the appearance to people that Trump has to win, just like Bush won. That's why you cite Bush versus Gore. It's rhetorical.
Northwestern professor Jack Doppelt specializes in media law and ethics, immigrant affairs, and voting rights.
One of the reasons why some people, me included, think that Bush versus Gore was a literal judicial coup rather than a reasoned decision was the way in which they went about it and took the case at all from what is the norm, which is the state decided by state law what the resolution was, and then prevented the state's decision from going into effect. And in the decision, they effectively said, we're basing this on equal protection, but it's an equal protection that applies very peculiarly to the specific county races and the way they were counted this time in Florida.
Both Doppelt and Kang said they do not think the president will be victorious in his lawsuits, especially in Pennsylvania. And even if he was, the court's decision would not affect the outcome of the 2020 presidential election.
The way that you think of the right to vote in American law is really largely driven through equal protection, which means that the state has the option to give its citizens a right to vote. It doesn't have to do that. It doesn't have to hold a presidential election. The Pennsylvania legislature can just appoint presidential electors without an election if they wanted. But once the state decides to have an election and allow people to vote on things, it has to administer the right to vote in an equal way and treat everyone the same, subject to equal protection. And so most of our voting rights law has to do with this sort of question about equal treatment of voters across categories rather than whether there's a right to vote in the first place.
For WNUR News, I'm Angelina Campanile.